Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble.
It's a fucking disgrace.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maradona.
Zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met de balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp! Die neemt de bal feilloos aan! En hij schiet de bal erin!
Solo. And welcome back to the Scoreless Thriller podcast. I'm Alex, and I'm joined as always by Leon. Leon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and I'm very happy to have this talk with you guys today.
Yeah, and we're really excited to be joined by Lars Jonsson in Oslo from Josimar magazine. Lars, thank you so much for taking your time to join us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So we really wanted to get have this discussion, you know, up to date, because it's been, you know, all over the news recently in the past few weeks and also the past month about the potential for a boycott of the World Cup in Qatar and how it started in Norway. But for outsiders, where did this sort of discussion in Norway of the potential for a boycott start? I know the first club who brought it up was in Tromsø, but where is the sort of momentum for this movement come from?
It's difficult to pinpoint an exact, you know, time and a person who came up with the idea or, you know, put this on the agenda. But we, our magazine, we've been, I think we wrote about Qatar for the first time just after they were awarded the hosting rights of the 2022 World Cup. And we were there in 2015 to document the conditions of the workers. And we were there in 2018. And I think we took a stance in 2018 that kind of a pro boycott or think if what would have happened if this was apartheid, you know, turn the clock back 40 years and FIFA had put a World Cup in apartheid South Africa, how would the football world have reacted? And I think every time there's some news from Qatar, another report, for example, by human rights organizations, etc., there's been people, you know, warming to the idea or jumping on the bandwagon, if you like, or just saying this is we got to draw the line somewhere, we got to boycott this. And it's been kind of growing on social media, on fan forums, you know, when supporters travel around watching their favorite teams, they obviously spend a lot of time on a bus or in this country, we have to fly quite often to get to away games when you follow the team. So we hang around the airport bars and stuff. So this is the kind of stuff that they talk about, you know, the how football is run and how wrong the whole the process of awarding or have corrupt and greedy the top echelons of the game has become, and that, you know, putting World Cups in places where you practice Sharia law, that is how kind of the epitome of how bad it is. So it's kind of grown, right? Mm-hmm. But it went off the rails a few weeks ago when that article in The Guardian came out, and then Tromsø, as you said, called for our national team to boycott it, or it urged the Football Association to, you know, boycott a World Cup in Qatar and urge other clubs to come up with similar statements. And that obviously put it right back on the agenda.
That's very interesting, because I feel the kind of background conditions were the same in Germany, for example. So there was critique against the World Cup being held in Qatar right from the get-go after the nomination, and then also throughout the last couple of years. So I wonder, why do you think it is especially in Norway that suddenly that was boiling kind of beneath the surface, broke out, and the criticism started on that level?
Yeah, it's boiling. It has boiled under the surface, and it's been mentioned on and off in the mainstream media. I don't know how much coverage has been given to Qatar and similar, you know, sports washing type of initiatives that have been in Germany. We, for example, wrote a long story about one of our stories of Qatar is about the workers who work at Hamad International Airport in Qatar, and which is where is the base for Qatar Airways. And Qatar Airways obviously is a premium sponsor, or whatever they call it, of Bayern Munich. And the Bayern Munich fans, they absolutely vehemently oppose having anything to do with this kind of regime. So I suppose among fan groups everywhere who's been, you know, a bit socially conscious, like so many supporters groups in Germany are compared to other countries where that doesn't exist in the same way, I suppose. And that's the kind of, on a smaller scale, we have the same kind of engagement with our clubs, that all the supporters in this country have, as with German clubs, they're membership owned and so forth. The fans are a bigger part of the kind of decision-making process than you would find, for example, in England or in many other countries. So there is a... What needs to be understood as well is that the Norwegian football is a full-on democracy. That, you know, all clubs are members-owned, and that is by law. You know, there's no exceptions. All clubs are run by its members, and you can show up at the annual general meeting, propose anything under the sun, really, and then the members have to vote on it. And they can instruct the board on how to vote when the National Federation has its annual general meeting. So... If someone proposes at the annual general meeting of the FA that the national team should boycott Qatar, and your club members have instructed you to vote yes to that proposal, well, you're going to vote yes to that proposal. And then if there's enough delegates to do that, we will not be going to Qatar, if you know what I mean. So there's a kind of the route from grassroots to the top. It's shorter than in many
direction
countries.
Of power.
Yeah.
And how many clubs have sort of at this stage stated that they will support a boycott? Is it most of the teams in the top flight, or what is the kind of breakdown?
I don't know the exact numbers, but there's a majority of the clubs in the top division have now come out in favor of the breakdown. Of a boycott. But at the federation or the annual general meetings, the decision on this issue is actually moved to an extraordinary general meeting held in June, where they're going to decide this one issue. And those who vote on that are not just top flight clubs. It's all the clubs in the country. So they whose members consist of, you know, the people who train the children, who, you know, drive the kids around, who man the kiosk at match days where the kids are having them games, and do administrative voluntary work for the club. So it's all kind of clubs from the small to the big ones. So it's really difficult to see which ones would be pro and who would be against a boycott at this moment. But from the top side, it's heavily in favour of a boycott, in fact.
From the top side of the clubs, or from the top side of the Norwegian Football Association?
Yeah, from the clubs. The big clubs are actually in favour of a boycott. I don't know. It's difficult to say among the smaller clubs. But the point it's good you came in there and tried to
just clarify. To clarify.
Because the top boys, or the top brass of the FA, they are not. They are opposed.
No, I can imagine not.
So that's the difference there. Yeah.
So this was raised at the AGM, was it last month? And then
it was on the 14th of March, yeah.
Okay, and then it was decided that you would have a EGM in June to decide whether Norway would go for it. What has been the response of the people at the top of the Norwegian Football Federation? Because I can imagine that they definitely want Norway to go to the World Cup.
Yeah, they are shaking with fear, I would say, because they know that, you know, quite often at these general meetings or the AGMs that they hold every year, a lot of the proposals and changes in policy, they're kind of skewed. The wording of the proposal would be skewed in favor of how the board would think this should play out and so on. So it's quite often what is a democracy you can get a feeling it's a kind of a sham democracy. But when the people get, you know, behind a certain idea, we see a full-on democracy at play here. And that is what they are really afraid of, because they obviously don't know what this can lead to. And they fear that we're going to lose, they've argued, one day we're going to lose 100 million kroner, which is like 10 million euro. And then the following day was 200 million kroner, you know. So, we have to qualify. And then the second one, well, if we're going to boycott, we have to boycott the qualifiers as well, because that's part of the tournament, right? Mm-hmm. So there's been this shifting argument the whole time. And they've said, we believe in dialogue, but has it helped? No, it hasn't helped. I mean, you have the FA president basically in the same sentence saying that they believe in dialogue and confirming that dialogue hasn't helped one bit. So they're basically on thin ice the whole time. And the, you know, the population or the football fans or the kind of football community, they get that.
And is it slightly sly of that they've moved it to June, because now Norway has played games in the World Cup qualifying. So if they were to vote to boycott in June, surely it's more difficult for Norway to sort of take a step out of that process now.
It's a great question. I tried to ask that myself. What does this actually mean? Because that was a kind of key argument. You know, if we boycott, we have to boycott the qualifiers. What else? It wouldn't. I mean, this was at the AGM on the 14th of March. So the president of the Football Association said, "Well, if we boycott, we have to boycott the qualifiers because it wouldn't be fair play otherwise, right?" And then himself or he and his board proposes to move the decision to June, which is obviously way after the qualifiers have begun. And so what are you actually trying to tell us? Is that when we come to June, you're going to say, well, we can't boycott now.
Too late, guys. You should have raised it before.
Exactly. So we're unsure of what they're playing at. But from the fans' perspective and those who are pro-boycott, we're not boycotting the World Cup itself, in favor of boycott are not in favor of they are in favor of playing football, you know, yeah. But they're not in they want us to boycott the finals being played in Qatar now, and there's, although I haven't read all the, you know, the FIFA statutes, I don't know all the small print, but I'm quite sure in there you will find that FIFA has the right to move the World Cup finals under certain circumstances, say if a war breaks out or if it's a natural disaster or if it's a, you know, a pandemic, perhaps, you know, all of these things that there are, if and what, you know, if you, something in those FIFA clauses would come into play and FIFA would decide to move the World Cup, say to Germany, we would want to be part of that, because we're not against the World Cup being held in Germany, obviously. So, there's been a lot of shifting arguments, but I think from a fan's perspective, boycotting qualifiers hasn't really been the point. It is playing football. It's cheering on your team on the graveyard of thousands of dead migrants. That is the kind of the point of this.
But do you think that, given that actually Norway decides to boycott this World Cup, do you think that this will then lead to similar actions taking place in different countries, because surely it will not be enough for the World Cup to be moved if only Norway was to not take part in that World Cup. And do you think it's likely, because you see some of these very performative actions of teams that now put human rights on their shirts before games, but it's a long way from that towards the Football Association actually saying that they won't take part. Do you think that it's likely that it's going that in that direction internationally?
Really difficult to say, but it is an interesting thing with all these teams wearing those T-shirts.
Yes.
Is it because the federations want to, you know, assure the fans, kind of ease the tension, you know, I put ice in our veins to say, okay, we are actually doing something. The symbol, look at these. Oh, so is it all a sham or do they actually have a heart in this? We find that we don't know. I know for a fact that a lot of the Norwegian players, they would prefer not to play a World Cup in Qatar, but they won't. They oppose a boycott, but they think that it was a disastrous decision. So
yeah, but then the question: how do you show, as you said, that you have a heart in this? If you say that you're not boycotting it, but you said that it was a shame that it was actually given to Qatar, is that enough? Or how much of a heart do you have to actually show if you take into consideration the stark violations of workers' rights and everything that has been going on?
I don't think, yeah, the Federation's heart is not, certainly not in it.
Yeah.
And they've, as they said, they've tried dialogue and they've tried, I mean, T-shirts, if you want to make a statement, you know, you'd say that we are actually not taking part in this. All of these other kind of initiatives on the surface stuff, who's gonna remember that in when the World Cup, whoever wins, yeah, you know, is raising the World Cup trophy. But as you said, I mean, there's other issues to be raised here. I mean, you see Martin Ødegaard, the Norwegian national team captain, now he plays for Arsenal. He's a Real Madrid owned player, you know, running around with Fly Emirates on their shirts. You got Toni Kroos coming out now against the abuse of migrant workers in Qatar, and he plays for the team with ties to the Middle East and so on. So it's a lot of kind of uncomfortable questions that will come out of this as well. Boycott or not boycott, you know.
Yeah. Hosemar, your magazine boycotted the 2018 World Cup in Russia, correct? And
yeah, we didn't. Depending what you mean by boycott, we're not a day-to-day kind of news outlet.
But didn't cover it.
We didn't cover it. We didn't go there. We went there before the World Cup to uncover the abuse of migrant workers at the stadium at St. Petersburg. Where they, it was a World Cup of corruption, basically, where migrant workers were badly treated, and they used North Koreans to work on the stadium sites. North Koreans basically are slaves; they are sent there by their government in return for some hard currency, and we revealed that there had been deaths among the North Koreans who then lived in kind of these shipping containers outside the stadium. So yeah, no, we didn't go to Russia. And in all of these bigger championships, we produce a kind of a, what we call the World Cup or Euro Bibles, kind of a double-sized or a bumper issue about the fourth upcoming championship. And for the World Cup in 2018, we all focused on kind of a historical articles about the history of the World Cup, great teams, great players, and so on. Nothing about the actual World Cup that was, you know, a month ahead of us. So we'll be doing that when it comes to Qatar as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you said earlier that you went to Qatar yourselves to do research 2015, I think, and 2018.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, at what point or in what situation did you collectively made the call that you would boycott the World Cup or not cover it in that way?
I think it's difficult to pinpoint, because this is kind of a discussion that you'd have or the day in and day out within the, you know, the office. But we took a clear stance. We've been following the developments of FIFA and how these hosting rights are awarded as well. So we, you know, before the 2015 arrests of FIFA top echelons, we knew obviously what was going on. So it was easy for us in 2015 when we'd actually seen and talked to people. We've seen how they were treated and the working conditions. And, you know, I can't remember the date we kind of made it official.
Yeah.
But it was, I believe it was after that in 2015 that we said, right, we can't. This is just wrong. We should not have a World Cup in Qatar. But obviously, we're not playing football. we're not on the national team. But, you know, that football should boycott a World Cup in Qatar.
Yeah, and that's a question also for football enthusiasts, right? It's not just for the players, but also for you as an individual. Am I going to watch it? And how am I going to talk about it? And how much should this narrative of workers' exploitation take place in all of this?
Yeah.
I think that's hugely important. Go ahead.
A good point in that is when we revealed the massive corruption and debts and so on, abuse of migrant workers on the stadium in St. Petersburg. It's a good point in that because we then obviously had a bit of I tried to watch the kind of the reports going on from the World Cup in Russia outside of the actual matches. You know, there's usually a lot of other kind of journalism going on in a World Cup. You interview teams, fans or whatever, and you have these narratives you want to tell, right? How much critical journalism was there? Well, there was some, but not too much, and not as much as we would have wanted, you know, thinking of Russia's history and so on. And before, I believe it was the semi-final between Belgium and France that were played in St. Petersburg, and the Norwegian TV2, which are their broadcast, hold the broadcasting rights for that particular match anyway. And the commentator was standing out, there was an hour before kickoff or whatever, standing in front of the stadium and, you know, talking about the story of St. Petersburg being this, you know, it's a historical town with great old buildings. And now behind us, this futuristic stadium amalgamating this into the old and the new, you know, talking about this is some sort of architectural masterpiece. I mean, people died doing this, you know, nothing about this. Rather, it's all about selling the product. We have a World Cup semi-final coming up here, you know. And that's what, you know, what are you doing? Are you just PR people? Are you not supposed to be some kind of journalists in there? We're not expecting everyone, you know, whenever someone touches the ball, that you've got to have a line or two about abuse of migrant workers. Oh, it's a great goal, but remember who built
that. Yeah, statistic, you know, on the side.
Exactly, you know, but certainly a certain part of the coverage of a four-week tournament must be dedicated to non-sporting issues, right? And certainly you're not supposed to, I don't know what you would call it, you know, but sugarcoat. Everything just because you want to have drawing as many viewers that as you would want it to before a critical World Cup match. So that has been lacking, and we've not urged other media or TV companies, for example, to boycott the World Cup, but to have a more kind of a critical outlook of what they are actually covering.
Did you watch the matches?
I watched it. I watched almost every match, in fact. Yes, I did. I won't do that in 2022, though.
Why not?
I promise. Simply because of it. This is a far worse case than Russia 2018, I think. But I did watch it in Russia with semi-enthusiasm. But it is. And I mean, that is the whole point of this boycott. It is a difficult thing. You're kind of on a two-edged sword the whole time, you know. You've grown up loving this festival of football that comes on every 4 years, you know. Missing out on that, it's a difficult decision to say, I'm not going to watch this. So I do understand that, you know, it's not as if it's that clear cut. No, we're simply going to boycott, because it's part of it, part of you. It's just part of our culture as well.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, that probes the question, because you said earlier that some of the North Korean workers during the World Cup preparation in Russia died while building the stadium. And now you said that the situation is way worse in Qatar. But of course, it kind of raises the question, where do you draw the line also personally? When do you stop engaging or not watching a World Cup completely? And at what point is that? And of course, it's always very hard to pinpoint this down. But yeah.
I think if you look at the way I know the boycott movement in Norway now, it's not just a kind of a boycott a World Cup in Qatar. This is kind of revolt against how the modern game is run. If you're going back to when the FIFA executive committee that gave the World Cup to Russia and Qatar, you know, two of them were banned even before the votes took place. And then 16 of the 22 are either, you know, banned from football or they're in jail. A couple of them are dead. So we come to a point where greed and corruption just, it stops at nothing. And they gave the World Cup, I mean, Russia, after all, is a kind of a football country. It has people to fill the stadiums in to start with. You know, it has teams, and has play. It has a national team that's, you know, qualify for stuff semi regularly. Anyway, Qatar is nothing. It's just a little piece of land in the desert who survives on this underclass of imported people, and. So I think that all of this combined makes it, you know, and who die, by the way, and live in appalling conditions, and they die by the men in their prime, die of old men's diseases, you know, heart attacks, all of a sudden, people in their 20s to their 40s. So I think that if you got to draw the lines somewhere, it stops here. The buck stops kind of here, because what is next? If this is okay, what is next? You know, stadiums built by children, or, you know, North Korea organizing the next World Cup, or some other, you know, the next dictatorship that comes along. So I think there's so many things that you can throw into this. That, I mean, if we're ever going to say no and try to take back football, this is it. If that makes any sense.
And then how do we take back football?
I don't really have the answer to that, but certainly is to signal to those, whoever's running it, that, you know, football is the most, it's a global cultural denominator. It's the biggest sport. It's a cultural in itself, a culture. It's not only a sport, it's everything, you know. It's from the smallest club to the biggest in the world, and the World Cup comes into that as the biggest festival. We need to have the game and that culture and the forefront, and when we're thinking about the game, not maximizing profits every single thing that we do. How do we maximize profits on this, you know? And that's when they now, you see the Champions League, although it's got nothing to do with FIFA as such, but the Champions League now probably going to be a kind of a closed league or the whatever, and the World Cup's expanding. FIFA want to have a huge kind of FIFA World Cup to replace the Champions League and other type of continental club tournaments, only, you know, to make the next dollar. And is that the point of it? And that, whose pocketbooks are impossible to empty? Well, it's those kind of countries that don't care too much about human rights, for example. So it's difficult to do, but you have to send that signal somehow.
Yeah, but with this in mind, I was wondering, within the grassroots movement that you described earlier, are there any ideas or initiatives of alternative clubs, alternative championships, World Cups, whatever, anything, you know, that you can point
to offer people like an alternative narrative or message.
Yeah, or even just opportunity to watch matches if they don't want to watch the World Cup matches.
Yeah, yeah.
Simultaneously.
If you get like, you could get 12 countries to boycott, and then they could hold a, you know, a separate tournament.
All countries to which didn't qualify.
Yeah. I have not seen any of that. No, that would have been really interesting. It would have gained massive support.
Yeah.
Big viewership around the world. No, I don't know anything about of that. It's more of a right the wrongs of the current situation. It's not creating a kind of a parallel thing.
Yeah, but I mean, take a look at historically what has happened with FIFA in the last decades. Kind of this idea of righting the wrong is a very big and challenging one, right? So sometimes I wonder whether to create alternative structures might not be a more promising pathway, at least to challenge the system that is in place, and then to put pressure on the people that see, okay, this could also be done in a different way, where there's no stark workers' rights violations and maybe less corruption and the more the core ideals of football.
It's a big and good question. I don't really have the answer, any kind of input, but what there obviously been mentions about, you know, you got to start over again, you know.
Yeah.
Get rid of FIFA, you have to reorganize, but how do you do that even, you know? It's a tough one, that, but certainly football is a, you know, we're all part of the same organism. If you, whichever team you play for, it's part of your regional structure, which is part of the national structure, which is part of the international structure. So we're all kind of interconnected. And that's the great thing about football, that we're all part of this same organism. And that's why I think what happens at the top irritates and annoys and makes people sad, because it's so far from what they are involved in and how they got involved into it. And what football means to them and so on. And it's still part of that same organism that you really wouldn't want anything to do with, you know? And that is one of the great things about football, that the big and small, we're all the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people who oppose the boycott, I've seen arguments that actually the better way of dealing with the issue is through dialogue. I think this was also mentioned by the Norwegian Football Federation.
Yeah.
How do you deal with those arguments? And I presume you don't take them as at face value.
I know that the Norwegian FA have been in Qatar and they have met workers and representatives from the organising committee and so forth. And they've written to FIFA. But, you know, when you travel to Qatar to meet to talk to those who are working on the infrastructure project, you're not talking to any random worker off the street. You don't.
No, I think the article in Osimar, like it demonstrates this very well, where he can't interview the workers directly unless the press officer is with them.
And it's one point there where they start talking among themselves because they're unsure how to answer. And there's some instruction going the other way in Arabic. Unbeknown to them, the photographer that we had with us actually speaks Arabic, so we could actually dissect what we're saying. And, you know, they were clearly instructed. And I honestly don't think that the top people at the Norwegian FA actually understand that that's the way it goes on, to be quite honest. I don't think they understand how corrupt. They talk of Gianni Infantino at FIFA, the president of FIFA, as being a leader of or someone who stands for good governance. Because the guy says good governance a lot. So
do you think this is more blissful ignorance, or they actually buy into that?
That's a good question. We discuss this quite often in the office. Is it really?
Is he an idiot or just malicious?
Yes. Yeah. How can you not see what's going on, for example, in FIFA? We've written quite a few articles on our English language website about Infantino's moves, his power moves, and how he kind of instructs, you know, he kicks off people of the independent committees in FIFA and he replaces them with people who are loyalists to him, right? And I mean, don't they get any of that information their way? I mean, at the Federation head office, you know, do they actually think that these people act the way what they say? Or I mean, is it just, are they stupid or just, you know, malicious, or are they blissfully ignorant, or do they believe it? It's difficult to come with a proper answer to fall down a proper answer on that, really. But it baffles me. It really does baffle me that you think if you look at FIFA's record since those arrests in 2015 and since Infantino's been in place, what's actually positive? Is there anything? Well, he stands for good governance. He says good governance, so he must mean good governance, you know. And we go to Qatar and we talk, and they say, well, it's tough, but it's getting better. Really? You know, do you just believe whatever's been served, served up? So I honestly don't think they understand how bad it is and don't understand how bad FIFA actually is. Yeah, but if it's just because they are want to look the other way or just too stupid to understand, I've not come to a conclusion on that as yet.
Yeah, because the issue that you've just described, that for official visits also of media representatives, they have kind of this Potemkin's villages of workers where everything looks kind of perfect and clean. And then you'll have interviews where the supervisor is also the translator and stands right next to the interviewee and stuff. But of course, you'll also have exactly the different kinds of more investigative journalism, which shows the situation of the Nepalese and the Indian and the Bangladeshi workers there. There's actually one documentary in Germany, a very short one, which kind of shows the stark contrast between the official version of official media outlets filming what was going on and then the investigative one. So it is accessible, this information, right? It's not some conspiratorial thing out there, but you can see what's going on. So I'm wondering how can people pretend not to know this, or how can they actually not know this?
Yeah, it's baffling. As you said, you know, there aren't, we've been there. So in our country, people, you know, actually got to see, the first time we were there in 2015, we had the TV broadcaster with us as well. So there was actually TV pictures. We had, you know, live footage, or not live, but, you know, film on TV showing these conditions. So it's nothing new. But I don't know, they did choose to believe the positive narrative that have been spun. I suppose. Because there is no historic record that shows that a dialogue with FIFA is gets you anywhere, you know? For example. So that you now, you know, years and years after this has been uncovered and continue to be uncovered, you still believe that you can dialogue your way into reform work for workers' rights in a Middle Eastern country. I don't know. It's baffling.
So, and then moving forward, where do you see, if Norway does decide to boycott the tournament in June, do you think that that will be enough to put pressure on the countries and its neighbour to follow suit? That, you know, the other Scandinavians, and this sort of public push from the Norways will be enough to put pressure on other countries to follow suit?
I think so. I don't think they will end up with the same conclusion, though. I saw a letter on the Swedish Federation's website the other or on the kind of an explanation of where they stand on the issue, and they're totally against it and so forth. But obviously the president of the Swedish FA is the vice president of UEFA, these are all football politicians. There was a poll in the biggest newspaper in the country now that said 55% of the population here supports a boycott. And that's not 55% of the kind of those who are going to vote on the EGM, but among the country. Like it's even gone beyond the football community. Yeah. It's beyond those in the know. I mean, regular people now get the idea how bad this is.
Do you think and that number would be higher in if you were just to poll your average Norwegian football fan? Do you think there would be higher support for the?
Yes, I do think this be a good sizable majority, bigger than that 55%. If there was a match weekend this weekend, which it isn't obviously, and it won't be any well because it's been won't be any matches till May now, and obviously be no fans anyway. But if there were, you could go into a ground and you'd get a good majority saying we want to boycott.
Yeah. They did the same in Germany, and there was a big majority of football fans and ultras who would boycott this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if in June we come to the point, and again, if the delegates now vote to boycott, the FA has no choice, you know, but to pull out of whatever. If we qualify, so a boy, they can't just say, well, you know, the board has decided otherwise. They can't do that. They're actually bound by the will of the general meeting. I do think that would set the stuff in motion in the neighboring countries and putting on the agenda in countries where it's certainly not on the in England, for example, or in France, or you know, that there are countries willing to sacrifice, you know, going for glory at the World Cup, and there's a lot of income and so on, because they have a moral compass. No doubt it would be an enormous story. You see that already. I've been interviewed by, we are two people who work at Yosimo magazine, and we've been interviewed by media all from all over now in the last. Ever since that Trump's statement came out, and kind of they've read out, you know, that we've been there and so forth, and that we've been kind of upfront about the whole thing. So we've been interviewed, constantly, once a week at least now. So by foreign journalists from Argentina to Ireland to everywhere. So if you know this actually happens, it would blow up.
Do you have any further angles, Leon, that you wanted to discuss?
With that being said, thank you so much for also joining our podcast. That's really good. And I do have one more question, and it is kind of with the research you've done into what has gone on in Russia, but also in Qatar now, has this had some spillover effects or that also other areas of life where you think, okay, maybe if we have to boycott the World Cup for the wrongdoings in the workers' rights, because surely that's not something that's only happening in football, but also when you took a look at how technological gadgets are produced or chocolate or whatever. Did it make you more aware of what is going on?
And I think, well, there is the no side, if you have those who are opposing boycott, or I think it's like, you know, yeah, it's bad what goes on in Qatar, but, you know, where do we draw the line? Because, you know, the next Winter Olympics is going to be in Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's what about Beijing? Well, you're not going to boycott that because you take home all the medals, right?
Yeah.
But I think that if you're a football fan and you live and breathe the game and so on, I think you should be allowed to come down on, you know, draw the line in the sand, if you like, when it comes to how we run our game and where our championships and World Cups are being played, without having to scrutinize every decision you've made in life, you know, if it's been according to your moral compass. I mean, most people still drive fossil fuel cars. They ruin the environment. Ha! Well, why don't you start there? Yeah, you know, what about that? You know that T-shirt? People, can you be actually sure that it's not, you know, made in a sweatshop, or as you said, the technological gadgets that are so popular. Those are very uncomfortable questions, really. But I don't think that we have to say yes and no and have to be morally clean on absolutely every aspect because we simply don't want football to dance on the graves of dead migrant workers. I think we can have, you know, it's super if people, you know, reflect on their own lives and their consumerism as a part of this.
Yeah.
I think that we should allow people to oppose playing football in playing the World Cup in Qatar and not being angels in all other aspects of their lives.
Yeah, no, surely it's very important to not have this whataboutism where you just throw all the wrongdoings of the world onto someone who just wants to
throw your hands up. It's like,
get one thing fixed. I was just wondering, because for me, I think it's very interesting that, of course, these issues are interconnected and it's not limited to football in and of itself.
No.
And while I think it's incredibly important that these issues are uncovered in football, of course, you should do the same everywhere else as well.
But I think, you know, tech magazines can do that with the tech industry.
Exactly.
A football magazine should do that about football. So,
yeah, I didn't want to put the pressure all over as the magazine.
We have enough to do already. We start covering, like, you know, what the car industry is doing as well.
I agree.
I look forward to having somebody on from the curling federation to ask him why is he not boycotting the Beijing Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if the curling ultras or the cross country skiing fanatics, you know, if they all of a sudden join a kind of a boycott bandwagon, you know, regarding Beijing, I'll be all for it. But, you know, it's a different thing. The Olympics is a TV event. Although skiing, for example, is our national sport, it's still a TV thing. I mean, football is something that you live. You're at the pitch teaching kids. You watch your favorite team. You travel around. It's a culture as well. Whereas skiing is a pastime that you do in the wintertime, and you come home and watch it on TV. You don't live it. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I guess people maybe from Austria or somewhere else in the world
would
disagree. I think you can form like a club culture and a little culture of interactions around most sports that are very meaningful for the people that play them and
absolutely
not just TV events. But yeah.
I don't disagree, but I think it's not enough. People, it's not big enough. That it's kind of very, very niche, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, one curling club could set the world in motion to get the curling community of the world to boycott Beijing. I don't think that's going to happen. Sadly, I wish it was the same kind of social, you know, we'd call it social responsibility or whatever, among everyone, you know. We could have had this discussion when there was the World Athletics Championship as well in Qatar, but it never came up. Not like this, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your time, Lars. Where can people find more information on the work that you do and also the work of Josimar Magazine?
If you go to josimarfootball.com, it's our English language website, and we've republished our Qatar articles as well, so they're on top now, so everyone can see where you know see what we uncovered whilst we were there, and you can scroll down a bit and see what how FIFA has run these days. It's not a pretty picture.
Yeah, no, I encourage everyone to at least check it out. It's really really in-depth reporting. Thanks so much for taking some time out of your Easter break, Lars.
No problem. Yeah, have a good
thanks
one.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
That was so interesting. Thank you.
Social Podcast Network.